Welcome to World Cafe, Words and Music from WXPN at NPR Music. I'm David Dye. Our guest today, Jeff Beck, has been playing astonishing, innovative guitar since the 1960s with the Yardbirds. His second group helped launch the career of vocalist Rod Stewart. He made best-selling instrumental albums on Blow by Blow and Wired, and now has a new album, Emotion and Commotion. Recently, Jeff Beck has spent time with his fellow Yardbirds guitarist Eric Clapton in a series of concerts showcasing the differences in their styles. He joins us today in conversation from London, and I began by asking him about the new album, Emotion and Commotion. I had heard that when he started working on it, he was considering a full album of guitar interpretations of classical pieces.
Yeah, there was. I've made a version of Mahler 5 Symphony, and I thought, you know, this is a good direction to go. I took it along to EMI Classics in London, and they loved it and said, where's the rest of the album? And I just said to them how long it took me to learn it and, you know, to make it presentable. And they gave me a pile of classical possibilities to follow up, and I just never got round to. It was an awesome task, you know, and the result, the end result would have been me having to go to different, you know, classical recitals rather than take, I could not never afford to take a 50-piece orchestra on the road. So from that standpoint, it was a bit of a dead duck. But however, I did like the sound of my guitar with a big orchestra. And I pushed to have at least three or four tracks, you know, where I could show, you know, like a voice-like performance. And I selected Nessun Dorma, which was completely wacky idea, but it seemed to work. And someone gave me a CD of Jeff Buckley, and I was just overwhelmed with the passion in his voice. And I tried to adopt some of that passion in the guitar and the simplicity of the melody with the strings. And it was a nice departure from the shred sort of heavy groove that I've been doing most of my time.
Well, this album is a great argument for the guitar as a voice, kind of a human singing voice, and your way of playing on it emphasizes when did you kind of realize that you know, not shredding was a way to communicate emotionally?
Well, I've been, somebody, two separate interviewers have remarked that they thought it was a Santo and Johnny sort of treatment, which kind of was a little bit of a backhanded compliment, but then I love Santo and Johnny. Sleepwalk was so beautifully played on a steel guitar, as it happens, but the purity of tone, the lack of distortion, seemed to be a nice way to go, because Fender never intended, or Gibson, or any of the electric guitars, I don't think the manufacturers ever intended them to, you know, be distorted through racks of equipment beyond recognition. And I thought it was a nice thing to pay tribute to Leo Fender and the purity of tone. So that's where the voice part comes, because the Stratocaster does have a voice.
Absolutely. You mentioned Jeff Buckley, and you do a couple of tunes associated with him. Now, his voice and your guitar playing, I can see being really analogous in a way. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about his voice and what you were trying to do, say, with Corpus Christi Carol?
Yeah. well, because Jeff Buckley sang slightly falsetto in a sort of a painful, beautiful rendition, I just, anything that reaches me like that, whether it's Nessun Dorma or Corpus Christi, I hear myself and I look for the melody and how to interpret it. And just sitting quietly playing along with the record, I hear where I could go with it. And it's a nice departure from, you know, overload guitar and loads of powerful drums, just to let the guitar breathe naturally within the surroundings of an orchestra. It's a very, very nice, comfortable place to be.
And this is how it sounds on Emotion and Commotion. This is Corpus Christi Carol. Corpus Christi Carol, Jeff Beck, from a wonderful new album he has out called Emotion and Commotion. And as mentioned, a very different sounding record for him. And of course, he's going to be out on tour now with, you're not going to be able to take all 60 some strings, but there will be a little, there'll be an orchestra.
Yeah. some of the shows that enable us to afford the orchestra, I'd like to take them on, you know, or hire an orchestra in every town, but unfortunately, with the smaller venues, it's not possible, A, to get them on stage, and B, to pay them.
Yeah.
So it's a shame that some people will see the orchestra and some won't. But who knows? If the album is successful, then the gigs can be, we can increase the capacity, and then that's what I would really like to do. It was so much fun with these six recent dates with Eric Clapton, you know, having a professional string section. So maybe we'll go on with that.
Jeff Beck is our guest today, and as you mentioned, you'd finished up a series of concerts with Eric Clapton. Your styles are very different. How would you characterize the difference between them?
I suppose my lust for just world influences, Indian music, and right from Indian, the extreme Indian, traditional Indian music, to John McLaughlin's version of Indian music, rockabilly, it's all in the head. It's pretty mashed up. I mean, my brain is, because I'm very interested in sounds, diverse sounds. I can embrace Little Richard in the same breath as Puccini, or, you know, I'm very fortunate in coming from a family that had a piano in the house, and probably the best toy that a kid can have from the earliest time when I was tall enough to press the keys, and my mum played, you know, classical music. So that's where that started. One of my best possessions at the moment is an internet radio, which gets 50,000 channels of world music. So I'm never bored. I'm always listening out for new things.
Does it what happens when you get on stage playing together? Does it become in any way a competitive thing?
People would probably like to think so, but the competition fizzled out long ago. I think when I started up with George Martin, I never felt any challenge from Eric or Jimmy. That they were already huge stars in their own right with Zeppelin, and mid-70s. I was fortunate enough to have George Martin make an album entitled Blow by Blow, and that actually set me up for the next 10 years, really, because there were melodies on there that were not in any way converging on either Jimmy or Eric's styles. And I was impressed by as I mentioned before, the Mahavishnu Orchestra, and that album that I did with George was my version, a sort of very watered down version of Mahavishnu. More accessible, I think, for a lot of people.
Now, that album, Blow by Blow, is a legendary album. And before that, you worked with Stevie Wonder on Talking Book. Was that, working with him, any kind of an influence with you towards doing Blow by Blow?
I know that Epic Records, who I was with at the time, were desperate for me to do a record, and I was a little bit in one of those doldrums periods where I didn't really know what was going on. And I think my representatives got together with Epic and said, look, Jeff's in love with Stevie Wonder's Music of My Mind, which I think everybody was at the time. And they said, right, well, that's enough information. We'll talk to Berry Gordy. And Berry Gordy said, Steve would love to have Jeff come over and play on the Talking Book. So that's how it started. And I flew over there, and it was a learning curve for a week, Electric Lady Land Studios. And Stevie wrote three songs for me, and I played on Talking Book, and it was the beginning of a whole new chapter for me.
Did you play live in the studio with him?
Yeah. Wow. I actually played the original drums, which inspired the groove for Superstition. As a matter of fact, Stevie was out of the room when I was playing, just messing around on a drum kit, and he came in and said, "Don't stop." And I said, "Steve, it's me. You know, I don't play the drums." He said, "I don't care. Just keep playing." And then he got on the clavinet, and that that gave birth to the groove of that song.
And I understand he was going to give that to you.
He was. That was the purpose. That was the payment back for me after playing on Talking Book, which I had already done. And he I even helped out with the lyrics. He made a demo of it and took it back to Detroit. And Berry Gordy heard it and said, "That's a monstrous hit. Jeff's not going to have that first. You're going to have it." So he put the block on my version, which was good, really, because it gave Stevie a well-deserved hit that was long overdue.
Jeff Beck is our guest today. He has a new album called Emotion and Commotion. And here's something else. I was just reading in Rolling Stone about this great lost Motown Jeff Beck session. Now, that was all previous to this, right?
That was 70, 71. And I hadn't finished recruiting my band, and I was stuck with just Cozy Powell, who turned out to be a great support to me. We were living in my house at the time for a year, and I said, "Look, we're never going to get who we want. Let's go to Motown." And I chatted with Mickey Most, and he said, "You sure?" And I said, "Yeah." And he called up Berry Gordy, and Berry said, "You know, you're a successful producer. Maybe let's get together and see what we can come up with." So we booked 10 days at Motown, and unfortunately, we never finished. We ran out of time. Ran out of material and just walked out of this place with unfinished masters, which I still got, and I'm too afraid to open the box. I think they're probably just disintegrate by now.
What did they think of you all, of you and Cozy?
I don't think they cared much. They just wanted the money, and all the players said, "Where are the dots?" And we didn't really have any dots. We had to spend some time writing all the music out. I expected them to just join in and jam away, but they didn't. They're not used to that. They were used to reading the dots, and that's how it was. It was a very production line system. But after a couple of days of me and Cozy, you know, kicking the white, I guess, heavy rock riffs, they started to like us, although we played too loud in there. They didn't play loud at all. They were very quiet players. All the action happened in the control room rather than in, you know, the volume was well down in order to record. But when in the control room, it sounded like they were really, really kicking hard.
Boy, they must have really learned about that because they did all those sessions in that pit.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't believe walking in there thinking that we hadn't had a cruel trick played on us because it was so small. It was just some little, you know, like a sort of front room. But the sound was incredible.
Jeff Beck is our guest today. He has a new album called Emotion and Commotion. And Jeff, you're one of the few people I get to talk to who, growing up, had a chance to experience the early days of rock and roll firsthand. I mean, you saw Buddy Holly live. I guess you saw Gene Vincent, because Cliff Gallup, the guitar player, became an influence on you. What was that experience like, those early shows?
What, with Vincent?
Yeah.
Quite staggering. When he first appeared on the stage in a movie theater in Surrey, not far from my house, I was so taken with his stage presence. But the disappointment, simultaneously, there was disappointment in the fact that the Blue Caps band that he was famous, you know, with, weren't there. They were a British band, and that was half the reason I went there, to see him with the Blue Caps. So you can imagine the disappointment. But then he overrode that. He put on such an amazing show. I've never got over it. Saw Little Richard, the same thing happened, you know. Although I think he had Sounds Incorporated with him, which was fantastic. I mean, just those times were so unbridled excitement, you know.
Was it Buddy with the Crickets?
Just him with Joe Maldin and Jerry Allison. And unfortunately, we had pretty bad seats at the back and we didn't hear too well. And there were girls screaming all through, so a bit of a disappointment. But just to see him in 58 was amazing. You know, it was one of the best moments of my life, I think.
Do you practice?
Oh, yeah. I practiced for an hour this morning.
Yeah.
Hour in the morning, hour in the evening. Otherwise, I lose it. You know, the more you practice, the better you get.
So what is practicing for Jeff Beck? What do you do?
In bed, I have a little lamp down by the side of the bed so that if an idea comes, I haven't got to get out of bed and do it. So I have a guitar resting up against the bed. And it may sound weird, but Hendrix used to take his guitar to bed. And I just play figures, phrases, and play very quietly. You know, I don't have a loud level. I listen to what the amp's saying and what the guitar is saying. And then just a 3 or 4 note phrase that I work on, and then practice my picking, high speed picking, slow speed picking, anything. You know, just must drive people around me mad, but I have to do it as long as it keeps the the input and the inspiration going. And if I don't come away from each day with something that's slightly exciting, then I failed.
Is technique, if you're a young guitar player, and there's so many young guitar players who are just loaded with technique, and yet sometimes you don't feel the emotion in what they're doing.
No. Well, the trouble is when I play a long tour, I get the technique and it overshadows the soul. But luckily, I wasn't on top form when I made this album. I actually lost the use of a finger. One of the most important fingers, the index finger on the left hand, I cut it quite badly, and it turned out to be quite useful because I didn't over embellish the tunes that are on the album. Although there's a couple of dodgy solos here and there, that's how it had to be. I couldn't speed up the healing process.
Do you have a use of it back?
Yeah, just about. It's still numb on the very tip, but. Luckily, that's on one side of the finger rather than in the center, so I can still play reasonly well. I'd need to practice. Pardon?
Are you still playing without using a pick?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's become my, that's the way it is. I don't even think about a pick anymore.
And you're such a Strat player. It has a unique voice. Now, are you more of a fan of the late Les Paul's playing than of his guitar? Or?
No, I love his guitar, but you have to choose your weapon, you know. And seeing Hendrix actually was the key factor in me, making me choose this over the Les Paul. The Les Paul is a fabulous guitar. It's got a richer tone, perhaps, and thicker. General, the body is of the sound is thicker, but the Stratocaster is more of an Olympic runner against the more staid, Les Paul. It's more enables me to do more gymnastics.
You seem enormously busy now. Any regrets taking so much time between projects in the 80s and 90s?
Yeah, but they were good learning curves. To be depressed is not that bad, and. If you can come out of it on top, being depressed and doing nothing about it is bad, but I use the downtime, or should we say the fallow periods, to think about myself, what I want to do, rather than just be bungling some project somewhere. And I can take a good view of what's going on in the music world as well. But the frustrating not to have anything round the corner to look forward to, that was really the worst. Even if it's 6 months away, it's something. But 5 years went by without much happening.
Did you realize in hindsight that you were depressed, or did you realize at the time?
Oh, I know when I'm depressed. Or
yeah. Some people
but luckily, I've got other things to do. I'm very privileged to live in a beautiful house and in the country, and that is a medicine in itself. It's a, therapy to be able to look out and see animals just in the wild, and I've got my workshop. I've got plenty to do, but it's still not doesn't hit the spot. If you're a musician, you have to have both things.
I thought we'd close off with the one that Joss Stone does. I put a spell on you, which is not so much one of the orchestral tunes on here, but how did you pick that?
When we just started the album, I make no mistake about it that we were. The producer, Steve Lipson and Trevor Horn, were asking me constantly what I want to play, and I really didn't have a full album's worth of material in my head, so I went along there armed with a sack full of CDs, which I never even bothered to get out, because one thing led to another. I'd think of a track which they approved, and then it went from there. So we wrote on a blackboard about 25-30 songs, and we crossed them off without even recording them, you know, as we thought they would work. You know, we discussed each track. So that's how it started, really.
Well, it worked out really well on this. This is I Put a Spell on You.
I put a spell on you. Because you're my eye.
I Put a Spell on You, the track that our guest today, Jeff Beck, recorded with Joss Stone on that new album, Emotion and Commotion. And our thanks to Jeff for being our guest. I'm David Dye, World Cafe Words and Music from WXPN. And NPR Music is produced at WXPN in Philadelphia at xpn.org. We have a website. It's worldcafe.npr.org. Sign up for our other podcast. That's our World Cafe Next podcast. And our daily newsletter as well. That's at worldcafe.npr.org. Thanks a lot. This is the World Cafe.